Is Chinese influence in Australian universities a genuine threat, or are the fears unwarranted, perhaps even fuelled by some deep-seated xenophobia? In recent years, the number of Chinese students has skyrocketed in Australia. More than 20% of the 500,000 international students studying here are from the People's Republic of China. At the country's most prestigious universities, Sydney University, the University of Melbourne, the Australian National University, the figure is much higher. 60% of international students are Chinese. In recent months, we've heard countless reports of Chinese government monitoring of the students. And then there's the issue of Australian universities collaborating with Chinese companies and providing information indirectly to the Chinese military. Earlier this month, the head of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, Francis Adamson, took the extraordinary step of publicly urging universities to resist foreign interference and warned Beijing to expect greater scrutiny of its activities abroad as its influence expands. On today's panel, we're going to explore China's rising influence on Australian university campuses. Our panel today, Alex Joske, is a student at ANU who's also doing research into China. Laurie Piercy is the Pro Vice Chancellor of the Confucius Institute at the University of New South Wales. Professor John Fitzgerald is the Director of Swinburne University's Asia Pacific Centre in Social Investment and Philanthropy. And Professor Nick Bisley is the Executive Director of La Trobe Asia. Thank you all for joining us this morning.
Great to be here.
Let me start with you, Nick. You're the head of La Trobe Asia. You're also on the advisory board of China Matters, which is a think tank that looks at China's rise. Now, it recently released a paper citing concerns about the number of students from China, particularly in the group of eight universities. In your view, is there an over-reliance here in Australia in the university sector on China?
Well, certainly no question that there is a heavy dependence on fee-paying overseas students in general at Australian universities, and that we disproportionately depend within that on students from the PRC. So the concern is both that, just from a market point of view, we're very heavily reliant on one or two customers, if you like, that's to say students from China, and also heavy dependence on students from India, for that matter. But then within that, I think the other issue that people often forget is that the students from the PRC are overwhelmingly concentrated in business and management disciplines, so they're studying degrees of business, accounting, finance and the like. So that there's a very heavy concentration of these students in very small parts of the university, so that even though there is a very large number of them actually in a particular corner, they tend to congregate in particular corners of the university, so that you end up with a very heavy dependence in one area.
Can you help us understand why we've gotten into that situation? I mean, most businesses would try and diversify their customer base beyond one or two. Why have we reached this point, Nick?
Well, the fundamental point is that the regulatory environment and in which universities operate and the funding model that the government imposes on universities means that we cannot cover the costs of doing the business of the university, the teaching and research of the university, without going abroad for funding. The other issue is we need to have, the way the universities are operating, we need to have that gap is quite large. And to be perfectly blunt, the only place in which we are able to find the number of students who are prepared to pay the fees that we demand of them is in China and latterly in India. Many universities are acutely aware of the fact that we're heavily dependent on one or two markets and are trying like crazy to diversify, but no one as yet has proven to be able to figure out a way to broaden the base out beyond this heavy dependence on China. It's a bit of a problem.
Isn't that scenario, though, Nick, reflected in other developed Western countries with old educational institutions? Are they all, though, as reliant on China?
Absolutely not. I mean, nowhere else in the world do you have a sector as a whole, that's to say, if you look at the universities across a single country, so heavily reliant on students from abroad, and particularly dependent on them from China, where you have, the UK, Canada and the US, there's very large numbers of students from China, but there's also very large numbers of students from all over the world, but they don't account for such a high proportion of the fees. So we are distinct New Zealand is heading in our direction, but not quite there yet. But if you just look at the basic numbers of what proportion of fee-paying students are from the PRC, Australia is way out in front.
And some places like Harvard, for example, have put caps on the proportion of students that can come from any one country.
Yeah, it's a pretty common practice in high-demand degree programs around the world. Business schools, particularly for a long time, have been seeking to ensure that you have a very diverse international cohort that says, apart from our home country, there's a fixed number, it might be 12%, it might be 15% or whatever it is, to ensure that you have that that diversity and don't get swamped by any one particular group. The challenge we face, of course, is if you're Harvard or you're INSEAD in Paris, that's, you can be very picky about who comes in.
Okay. And to ensure, so we perhaps can't pick and choose quite as much. Alex Joski, let me bring you in. You're a student at ANU, a significant proportion of Chinese students there. How do these issues, these dynamics that we're talking about here, manifest in day-to-day life on a university campus in Australia?
Yeah, well, I think the main issue is just there's an incredible lack of connection and interaction between Chinese students at Australian universities and the rest of the student population. So we see not just Chinese students coming in large numbers and, as Nick said, congregating in particular subject areas, but at ANU they're also congregating in particular residential halls. So there's really a quite separate community of Chinese students.
And do you see that as a particular problem? I mean, I know you have partial Chinese origin yourself. How do you read that scenario?
I think it's very detrimental to the well-being of Chinese students at Australian universities because they come here to experience Western life, Western education system. But when they get here, they just find themselves settling into the way they live back in China. And they don't really get the full benefits they could gain from an Australian university.
And does that diminish, in your view, the broader academic and social environment of the university?
Yeah, with a doubt. It's really skewering university culture, in my opinion, just because, some subjects are so heavily dominated by Chinese students, it totally changes the situation if you're not a Chinese student and you don't speak Chinese. And there have been a couple of cases of tutors actually conducting tutorials in Chinese, and this all really contributes to the unfortunate isolation of Chinese students at Australian universities, which then plays into the censorship that they live under, as they don't feel they're totally free to say what they want when they worry about, for example, their classmates or members of certain Chinese student organizations talking to the embassy about any pro-democracy or human rights activities they may be involved in.
Laurie Piercy, let me bring you in. You're joining us on the line from Beijing this morning. You're Pro-Vice Chancellor at the Confucius Institute at the University of New South Wales. That's also, it should be pointed out, a Group of Eight university. Do you agree with this notion that there is an over-reliance on Chinese students in the Aussie university sector and that there is this sort of difficulty around the ghettoisation of those students in the university communities?
Well, firstly, I think that Australian universities have been trailblazers internationally in terms of educating large numbers of international students, in particular from Asia, at scale for decades, long before internationalisation was considered a popular thing for universities to do, long before other universities had cottoned on to educating large numbers of international students at scale. Australian universities were really pioneers in terms of international education. UNSW, for example, back in the 1960s, we were at 10% international, which in those days for Australian universities was unheard of. Given China's development in the 60s, though, we didn't have really large numbers of Chinese students at all. I'd reflect on the environment in which universities and knowledge exchange takes place, which in the 21st century is fundamentally a globally connected and very much a globally competitive industry. And Australian universities have been proud of the fact that they have educated large numbers of international students to a very high quality level.
Sure. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm not sure it answered the question, though, which is whether or not you acknowledge this case for there being an over-reliance.
So in terms of where Australian higher education is going and in terms of where Chinese international students feature at Australian universities, I'd reflect on the fact that China is a country that invests real cultural capital in education. And that means that for a country with an economy that's worth, I think, north of $12 trillion, with large numbers of people entering the middle class, and a country that since the time of Confucius has invested real value in education, international education is perceived as a rite of passage. You know, one in three international students enrolled in the US come from China. China accounts for the single largest source of international students at universities in the UK, North America. Australia is no different, and there's no doubt that demand for programs from China at Australian universities growing quite significantly.
Okay, but can we just be clear about this, whether or not you accept there's an over-reliance or you disagree and you think that actually Australian universities are calibrating things in an appropriate way in terms of the level of Chinese students that are making up the international student population?
I'm uncomfortable about the term over-reliance. I'm uncomfortable about the term over-reliance in the context of one particular nationality. I'm very comfortable with educating international students, irrespective of where they come from, as long as they meet the very high quality threshold for entry. Whether the Australian government is investing enough in higher education, investing enough in research locally so that universities can educate students from all over the world and indeed Australia and conduct world-class research, absolutely. But in terms of over-reliance on one particular source country, I'm very uncomfortable about that type of language.
Sure, but I mean, let's be clear, at some universities, 60% of the international student population comes from China, and we have seen in the past, for example, a drop-off in students coming from India and the enormous impact that's had on a very significant sector. Surely it's reasonable then to ask this question.
I think it's reasonable for a country like Australia to engage in, you know, all forms of public debate, and, you know, higher education shouldn't be excluded from that. I think the real question needs to be what does Australia see as the role of its universities? Is the role of Australia's universities to engage internationally, to educate people from all over the world and be admired and envied by other education systems internationally for the quality of the experience that we provide? In terms of the...
But doesn't that business model have to be a sustainable one? And if you're narrowing your customer base to one or two, don't you expose yourself potentially to quite a lot of risk?
Look, let's look at every trade exposed area of the Australian economy.
Let's look at this question, Laurie. I would ask you just to answer it directly.
So, if you look at Australian universities, Chinese students represent the single largest source of international students. Is that a risk? Absolutely. There's a commercial risk involved. If for whatever reason demand deteriorates, and that could be because China's investing unprecedented amounts in its own higher education system, so China will have more universities in the top 100. Is there a risk that Chinese students will no longer come here? Is there a financial risk associated with that? Absolutely. Is that a risk that universities should be comfortable taking? I'd argue absolutely it should be. Universities are proud of educating large numbers of international students, including very large numbers of international students from China. Is there a risk, and are universities doing everything they possibly can to mitigate that? I might be calling from Beijing today, but I'm going to India on Friday. I was in Korea a fortnight ago. Universities, we're seeing double-digit growth from a whole range of source countries at the moment, like Indonesia, like Malaysia, like Singapore, and, you know, it's something that we celebrate.
Alex Joski at ANU, let me ask you for a response to that. Is the business case, is the broader argument so overwhelming that actually we should not necessarily worry about some of these perhaps growing pains that people might be observing on the campuses of Australian universities?
Yeah, I think that's just not true at all. I mean, at ANU, there have been internal documents that were released where the university actually admitted that it feels it's over-reliant on Chinese student numbers, and it's trying to diversify away from that. And I think the way that, you know, Laurie Pearcey was, you know, just trying to sort of shift the answer to other topics reflects an unwillingness by universities to ask the hard questions about China's influence at universities.
Do you want to respond to that, Laurie?
I'm trying to contextualize the way Australian universities operate internationally. Does UNSW think long and hard about its international engagement, including that with China? Absolutely, but we're engaged in a globally competitive and globally engaged enterprise here. And China's Australia's largest trading partner. It's soon to be the world's largest economy. Should universities be engaging with China? Do we do that in a way that is respectful of our huge tradition of academic freedom, of intellectual inquiry? Absolutely. Are we comfortable engaging with institutions that are funded by the Chinese government? Yes, but at the same time, we're fiercely proud of the tradition which underpins Australia's higher education system, and that is quality, it's academic freedom, and it's also freedom of intellectual inquiry. And so, the idea that we're dismissive of the way we operate internationally and we don't ask ourselves any hard questions, I find that a little bit difficult to accept. We're very comfortable with the risk and also the rewards that come from engaging with a really dynamic, emerging, and rapidly evolving country like China.
Professor John Fitzgerald, let me bring you in here, and thanks for your patience. There is this obvious concern about Chinese government monitoring of the activities of Chinese students in Australian universities. There's also the sort of broader concern about the interaction of Chinese companies, potentially with links to the military, interacting with Australian universities and research facilities. How genuine a cause for concern is this in your view?
Well, it's a cause for caution, I guess. Your opening remarks asking, did this present a threat, I think are really overstating the case. I don't think anyone's suggesting that research collaboration or enrolment of students from China presents a threat to Australia's higher education system. It's a pretty robust system. And as Laurie pointed out, universities are taking these concerns seriously in the internal conversations. And when they go abroad, of course, they're not going to alienate their customers by suggesting there are any problems with the relationship. But universities internally are asking questions. First, around overdependence on a single market, and this doesn't just relate to China, it relates to any single market. And I think you've touched on that question already. But the second is around research collaboration. And it has emerged in recent years that China is a major partner for Australia's international research collaboration. Now, historically and traditionally, that would have been Europe and the United States and Canada. But China's itself growing as a force in international research. And Australia would be foolish not to be part of that story, to join up with China in some respects. So my sense is that it's not a threat, one can't afford to be naive about entering into research collaborations with China, which is a little different from a number of our other traditional partners in a number of key respects. One is that it is a single party state. Secondly, that its research agenda is set as part of a national strategic plan, so that when Australian universities enter into collaborations with China, they're dealing with partners who have a clear sense of what they want to achieve, some national goal under the National Science and Science Technology Strategic Plan, whereas Australian scientists and universities tend to go into meetings hoping to do good science and lift their rankings and so on without any particular regard to Australian national strategy. So I think on Australia's side, one way to reduce vulnerabilities is to have a clearer sense within Australia about what Australia wants to achieve through research collaboration, particularly in science and technology, and to match that up with China. And where it matches well, go for it. Where it doesn't, start asking questions about why Australia should be supporting collaboration with China using taxpayers' money in areas that serve China's national interests and not particularly Australia's.
I'm talking to Professor John Fitzgerald, Professor Nick Bisley, Laurie Piercy and Alex Joske on the subject of Chinese influence on Australian university campuses. That's our Sunday roundtable discussion. John, could I just draw you for a response to those comments made by Francis Adamson, the head of DFAT, urging Australian universities to resist foreign interference, warning Beijing to expect greater scrutiny of its activities as its influence expands. The broader conversation, I know you're saying you don't perceive necessarily there to be a threat, but the undertone of the broader conversation is that there may be some kind of threat. Where do you think that comes from? Is there some kind of deep-seated cultural xenophobia at play that draws these conversations in that direction?
Well, Francis was talking about education, it's true, but as the Secretary of the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, she has a much broader portfolio to manage. Education is only part of it. She spoke on education because she was invited to speak at a university in the Confucius Center, and that was an appropriate place to address that issue. But if you're invited, for example, to speak on other subjects around business association with China or Australian media links with China, she might have made similar remarks. That is to say that China's engagement with Australia and Australia's engagement with China is taking place on a broad front, of which education is only one part. And as I said at the outset, China's a rather different state. We can't just walk into this relationship without thinking twice about what we're doing. It is not a threat, I would suggest. I can't imagine a future for Australia that doesn't involve close relations with China across many fronts. But we need to think about ways forward with those relationships. We need to get these relationships right now and our own sense of what we want out of the relationship in order to proceed and have successful relations with China. So to come back to your question, is it xenophobia? I think first off, it's happening across a broad front within Australia. Secondly, it's not just within Australia. We need to remember that the Canadian media, New Zealand media, academics in the United Kingdom are coming out making very, very similar comments and remarks around censorship of Cambridge University Press or of Springer Publications, around how it is that someone trained in a Chinese spy school sits in Wellington on the National Parliament of New Zealand. In Canada, how it is that China's reaching out and saying all Chinese overseas are patriots and need to support China's rise, and the Canadian media is saying, hang on a bit, these are Chinese Canadian citizens, they're not Chinese. So it's not just Australia that's asking these questions, it's right around the globe, certainly among some of our traditional partners. I'm referring to those that speak English, shall we say, because I'm reading the English media. But I think if we read Czech, if we read Hungarian, if we read French, we'd probably find similar concerns in some of those countries.
Alex Joski, ANU, I know you've been investigating some of the dimensions of this. A pretty fascinating read, certainly in terms of the level of detail about those that are working in collaboration with Australian universities and their links to military advancement at home in China.
Yeah, there's a real growing issue of members of the PLA or graduates of People's Liberation Army institutions coming to Australian universities, doing scholarship and research in high-tech fields, and then going back to China and using the training they've gained at Australian universities on specific Chinese military programs. So, for example, at ANU, there was one student who graduated from a Chinese military university, did a PhD at ANU in plasma physics. Then he returned to the Chinese military, and right now he's working on projects to develop plasma engines for the Chinese military. And this is really an issue that's systematic, in that it's a deliberate program by the Chinese government to try to improve its level of technological expertise. And it goes right across Group of Eight universities, and particularly UNSW and ANU, just because they're two universities with a high level of technological sophistication. So I was just doing some research last night, and there are at least 25 members of the PLA, graduates of PLA institutions, who've passed through UNSW as doctoral students or visiting scholars in the past decade.
Laurie, can I ask you just to respond to that? I mean, I know that the Confucius Institute is backed by Chinese money. Do you share any of those sorts of concerns that are being put forward? I take all of your points about the value of education in China, about the value of the relationship. Do you share any of these concerns?
Look, I mean, first and foremost, Australian universities operate in strict compliance with defence trade controls. And defence trade controls is a federally mandated architecture that ensures that all of our international research collaborations need to be compliant with that framework? Do we invest resources in making sure that our researchers are aware of their obligations, that they're compliant with their obligations? Absolutely. We need to make sure that all projects that we are involved with are assessed as not controlled, and that that we operate within that environment. In terms of PhD students, Australia is a country with a small population, with 10 to 12 universities that sit comfortably within the world top 100 to 150.
Laurie,
in order for us to remain competitive,
we need. I'm afraid. We are actually getting to the end of the program, so I'm going to have to ask you to leave it there. But it's been an absolutely fascinating conversation speaking to you all this morning. I know there's a lot more to this topic. Alex Joske, Laurie Piercy, Professor John Fitzgerald and Professor Nick Bisley, thank you very much for your time and thanks for your comments. Lots of you getting in touch via text and via Twitter this morning to comment on this particular conversation.